On the programme, Arts in Education, a new government charter. What does it mean for artists, teachers and students? Hello and welcome to Studio 8 here in the Radio Centre in RTE in Donnybrook in Dublin, and this discussion of the recently published Government Charter on Arts in Education. The charter is signed jointly by the Minister for Education and Skills, Rory Quinn, and the Minister for Arts, Heritage and the Gaeltacht, Jimmy Deanahan, and sets out a series of commitments and aspirations for the promotion of the arts within our education system, including a seemingly compulsory time and work commitment from individual artists and arts organisations in receipt of state funding. There are plans for reduced ticket prices for students in all national cultural institutions and broader access to these institutions. The Arts Council is asked to make various pledges, including the recognition of so-called arts-rich schools. And in the area of new technology, there's a plan to develop a portal site for arts in education. But what do the various commitments really mean? How binding are they? How will they be funded? When will they take effect? And how will they change or strengthen some of the good work already being done in many schools around the country? With us to discuss all this and more, Ministers Rory Quinn and Jimmy Deanahan, Orla McBride, Director of the Arts Council, John Coulihan, Professor Emeritus at NUI Maynooth, who's Chair of the Implementation Group to oversee developments arising from this charter, and Kieran Benson, author of the Keystone Benson Report on Arts and Education from 1979, and I think it's fair to say a sceptic on this new charter. Also in our audience, many people who've been involved in arts and education over many years, and a number of secondary school students who may indeed benefit from any positive changes and developments from the charter. Rory Quinn, Minister of Education, for you personally, how important is arts in education? What do you think an engagement with the arts can bring to a young person's education and development?
Well, I think education and growing up is about much more than doing your junior cert or getting so many points in your leaving cert. And there's an awful lot that happens in the world of education that is neither captured nor measured by what people put importance upon. I'll give you two examples. The Texaco Art Competition, of which I personally was a beneficiary, and next year the Young Scientists Exhibition, which will be celebrating 50 years. This doesn't surface on the official landscape, and yet it transforms the lives of schools and of individuals. And I was fortunate to win a couple of prizes in the Texaco Art Competition. And the sense of validation that you get from a much bigger peer group than your family or your class or your school, and the sense of self-confidence that it gave to me was I knew I wanted to be an architect. Lord David Puttenham, with whom I'm working very closely in education, who's the big film producer that many of you will be familiar with, Chariots of Fire and The Mission and that, he's been around actors nearly all his life. And they all have the same story, pretty much. And it goes like this. I was really never good at school, but I worked and performed in a play or a musical. And my English teacher, of all people, who gave me D's in every exam, said, Putnam, you really were brilliant. You really were good. And it was the first time that that young person was actually validated within the education system. They didn't get 600 points. They didn't get straight A's. They didn't get this. They got validation, and they went on to become whatever they became as actors. And I think the arts has the same holistic potential to liberate young people and to validate them.
OK, the charter then. There have been various reports and papers on arts and education in the past, many people looking at this area and making recommendations, a points of alignment document as a kind of forerunner to this charter. What's different about this, and practically, what will it mean?
Well, the difference is the fact that I'm sitting beside Jimmy Deanahan, who's the Minister for Arts and Culture, and that our two departments are talking to each other, and that education doesn't feel so defensive about other people coming into its territory, which historically had, and I think Johnny Coulihan might agree with that, you had to be an official in the world of education to have the permit to come through the door. And we are working together, and more to the point, our departments are working together, so long after we're off the stage, I think this momentum. Now, we're building on an awful lot of work that has been done before. This is not a completely fresh initiative. It would be arrogant and wrong to suggest that. And I know that's not Jimmy's. But Jimmy was the man who drove this. He was the person who persisted with me and insisted that we get involved. And, you know, there's a lot of things going on in the world of education, and another initiative was something that people felt, well, we've got enough. But his persistence, he is from Kerry after all, ensured that we got the charter.
Jimmy Dean, why were you so persistent about this? Why was it something you felt so strongly about?
Well, it's from my own experience. I've been involved in the arts now for, I would say, almost 40 years. And obviously, coming from a town like Listowel, I was brought up in the arts. Every day I'd meet people like John B. Keane on the street, Brian McMahon, Michael Hartnett, and Eamon Kelly was a very close friend of mine, Brendan Kennelly. So I was really, I suppose, nurtured in the arts. And also, being a teacher, I invited people like Brian McMahon into the school, John B. Keane, Michael Hartnett, and I just saw the difference these people made when they came into the school. It was really transformative. And now I meet some of these young people all over the world, and they will remember the day the artist came to the school and spoke to them and inspired them and really changed their lives in some cases. So I'm totally committed to this. And this was one of my objectives if I ever became the minister. And I was delighted to meet, you know, an artist. And Rory is more of an artist, I suppose, than I am because of his background and because of the fact that he was involved in art competition in the past and was recognised as being a very good artist. Both of us are very committed to this. And certainly, while we're in our offices, we will be driving this forward. And there are several elements to the charter. It provides a framework. There are several new ideas as well.
And we'll talk about those in a
moment. But the most important thing here is, Vincent, we have an implementation group and we have a set of actions and we have serious people representing the Department of Education, of the Arts Council, Johnny Coulihan, Mary Noonan, who was the chairperson of Pints of Alignment. So these people know what they're doing.
And they, I suspect they have quite a task ahead of them as well, and we'll hear from some of the members of that implementation group in a while. But the charter then specifically, I suppose one area where there's a lack of clarity, we'll say, is in relation to funding. There's no reference to how any of these changes will be paid for. And there's an onus on the Arts Council in particular, I suppose, to oversee various changes. You're talking about reduced ticket prices for the Abbey, for the National Concert Hall, for the cultural institutions. All of these things will come at a price. And how will that be funded?
Well, the point is reduced ticket prices. Well, it doesn't cost the departments anything to do that. After all, we are the funders. The taxpayer is the funder for the national cultural institutions. What we are saying, in certain cases where you wouldn't have capacity audiences or expecting capacity audiences, then you could reduce the price of admission. And I was at the Wexford Opera Festival last year, and I met some really bright, enthusiastic students from the academy, the music academy, and I asked them why they were down there. And they said because ticket prices were reduced. So that really brought it home to me that if you reduce ticket prices, you certainly can bring more people in. And if you have an event that's half capacity, for example, where you have plenty of vacant seats, then I think it would be good to give that incentive for young people to come in. And I suppose it's worth recognising as well that at this moment of time, access to the library and to the museum and to other national cultural institutions is free anyway.
A lot of the time it is free, absolutely.
So I think this will just provide an incentive. And just to say, it's fair to say that both the concert hall and the National Theatre, the Abbey, they have very good outreach education programmes. They're ongoing at this moment of time. So this is just part of that.
Rory Quinn, on a practical level again, looking forward, how do you think this charter will impact on schools and school children in Kerry, in Leitrim, in parts of our cities where schools are struggling to maintain basic educational standards in the face of cuts?
Yes, they are struggling, along with everybody else. But because we're struggling doesn't mean that we give up. We try harder. We're going to change the landscape of second-level schooling. The tyranny of the exam for the junior certificate will be gone by 2020. That sounds like an age away for the young people in the classroom, but we're deliberately doing it slowly so that we get it right. And it will start in September 2014 with the English language new system of assessment coming in June of 2017. So we have to look in a kind of that space. I think it's as important for somebody to understand why a poem was written by a poet as it is for them to memorise or analyse what the poem signifies or contains. And I can think of no better way of doing that than inviting a poet living in the locality. Jimmy talked about his own experience in Listowel, surrounded by writers. They were normal, everyday people. We have poets pretty well everywhere, and artists. And bring them into the school, not because it's coming up in the junior cert, not because it's going to be significant to the leaving cert, but because there is a real-life person who's a full-time poet. This is happening anyway, in different ways. We're giving it, an added impetus, and we're giving a structure to it at a time when we, frankly, have no extra money.
Are you not also bringing an element of compulsion to it? And Minister Deanhan, I want to ask you about this public service education dividend, the PSED, which, among other things, says that artists receiving state funding support from the state shall donate at least 2 hours each per annum to a local educational initiative. May not sound like much. I suspect that most artists are already giving a lot more than that. So how will this be implemented? And is it not bringing a kind of a questionable element of compulsion to it?
Well, it's certainly not. These are obviously recommendations and principles that we will be working through it. And obviously the implementation committee will be working through it as well. But this will present artists right across the spectrum, visual and performances, with great opportunities in schools. And at this moment of time, for example, my own local school, Drumcluck, where I went to school myself, they have now the Cultus Outreach Programme, but the kids are contributing something to that. But every kid from second class to sixth class in that school can play one instrument. By the time they get to sixth class, they're playing five instruments. And the reason being is that they are bringing people in to do that. So I know that people are exercised about this, and I've discussed this with just a small few artists that have expressed concern about it. But I feel they have nothing to fear here whatsoever. And I must say I was very, very encouraged by the attitude of Ace Donna, for example. And I addressed their national conference there recently, and I'm meeting them shortly. And what I've asked from them, what we have asked from them really, is to come up with a few proposals where they could offer programmes for schools. So we're going to ask the artists here to come up with proposals. So I think that there's a fear being expressed that this is going to be compulsive and all the rest. And
so you're saying to artists, if you're in receipt of funding from the state, you should give something back to the state and give something back to the public in the way of education.
And Vincent, most artists are doing that already anyway. And we're just saying to generally out there, anyone that gets funding from the state in any way, we would expect them to give something back to the state. And personally, I see nothing wrong with that. And I think that's very positive. And many artists, as we said, are doing that already.
John Coolahan, yeah. Head of the implementation body, to oversee this charter. And as I said, I imagine you could have quite a task ahead of you. Four other people on the committee with you. Now, you've been involved in pretty much every aspect of education throughout your life. And what do you believe are the obstacles to a deeper and more natural engagement with the arts? You know, do we need more money, more understanding from teachers or artists? And a key question, do we need this charter?
There's a tremendous amount of work going on, number one, which isn't very often affirmed or publicly recognised or hit the public radar. But I think there's great potential in creating synergies between these groups, bringing more coordination and collaboration, bringing each one in contact with others, where a fulcrum group can link up with the local arts organisations, link up with various associations throughout the country, not just in the metropolis, and use its good offices to kind of get that greater coordination going, collaboration, put arts and education in the public arena more, and be a stimulus and supportive agency as the thing moves forward. But we don't underestimate the difficulties, because the times are tough, as we say. We're in a period of very deep recession. But in a way, that's why I admire the two ministers. And the reason why I took on the job, well, there were two reasons. One, I was convinced that they were serious, committed about it, and also that they intended for the long term, that this was the start of something that would be built into the Irish system in terms of the education system and the arts world and the associations there, and build up a new sense of partnership between the various agencies. That for me was a very big one. But similarly speaking, there was awareness of the readiness and the talent and the experience and the wisdom that's out there, blending in a most sophisticated way their understanding of how arts and education can merge and can work cooperatively together. I think there's a great deal there to be tapped.
You've already been talking to a number of parties about the charter. What are you hearing? What kind of response are you getting?
I say generally extremely positive. And they themselves are very anxious to be partners in this process. We all realise its limitations. It's not a panacea for all things, particularly because of the resources. But nevertheless, they see it in the right direction. It's the first time it's ever happened. We've sought it for a long time. And that coordination of the two key departments involved with groups like the Arts Council is very significant. But there is also an intention to link in with other relevant departments. And that's where it will count in the longer run, the Department of Children and so on, and indeed the Department of Employment, whereby it becomes more a cabinet issue, where it's not a marginal issue. It kind of moves in much more central stage. But my key concern there, or my key, shall we say, cause of optimism there, is despite the recessionary times, the motivation that's out there, meeting the groups that you mentioned there has been very heartening. They're positively disposed, anxious to help, anxious to partner, would be keen for our support, and we're going to keep that dialogue going, because as the minister say in their charter, it will be updated. We will be giving them biannual reports, we'll be giving advice, and we will be the conduits from which the advice will be coming through the various groups represented here and others.
Can you modify the charter at all? I mean, is that power there, and would you be doing that as you go along? Would it be after a complete review of it?
I would say as we go along. At the moment, that's the charter signed by the two ministers. But even in the charter, as they say, they will be looking for advice and they want it to be updated. Well, if you're going to update a thing, it means that it's going to be expanded and developed and improved.
Do you believe that the civil servants in the two departments are as committed to this as the two ministers are?
I'd be honest there, I would have my reservations in the past. My experience hasn't been great in that arena. As you know, the Department of Arts is a new department, so in 1993. But I have to be honest with you, the record of education department and the arts has been very poor. I used to see it as having a withering hand on the arts organisations with which it was associated for so long. That, I think, is changing. And I think the leadership of Rory and others, but plus the broader debate, I think, is changing it. And the people I've met in the context of this current work, I'm very convinced of their genuine commitment.
Kieran Benson, you're the author of what became known as the Benson Report, I suppose the first major Arts Council report on the role of the arts in education. That's going back to 1979. Still the touchstone in many ways for arts policy and education in this country. What's your response to this new charter?
Well, I should say that Johnny and I go back all that time, because Johnny worked on that as well with me, and over 40 years we've worked together. So my first response is, of course, to welcome it. I mean, I welcome anything at a formal level between two ministers that will further this dimension of education. I absolutely applaud the minister's good intentions. And if you were going to make anything work in the area of education and the arts, you couldn't have got a better chair, and you've got a terrific committee. That said, they've been dealt, in my view, a very poor hand. And I might explain. I know ministers are very busy, and I know they don't write the documents to which they put their names. So if I say that I think this is a rather poor document, it's simply that the content for me is problematic. So at the heart of the document is the idea of creativity. And placing, and I quote, at the heart of our society and country. And on page 8, we have a sentence: we accept that creativity is neither a skill nor a standalone intellectual process. And on page 10, we have, there are 8 skills, one of which is being creative. There are internal conceptual contradictions in here. The writing is also problematic. And if I may say, I think the acronym AORIS for arts-rich schools. If you say that out loud and fast, you get an unfortunate word that no arts-rich school will want attached to it.
Well, I suppose it's better that the I is in there, at least. It could become a reach. If it was ARS, it might be more problematic.
But it's the second acronym. Whoever wrote this has an acronym app. Public Service Education Dividend, PSED. Now, at first sight, that looks like a terrific idea in a time of no resources. Get people to whom you give money to give a bit of labour. Actually, I think, in principle, it's an extraordinarily dangerous principle. It's rather Orwellian, and I'll explain why. And I've said it to the minister. I'm one of those people I've said publicly that I'm concerned about some of the decisions emanating from the Department of the Arts. I think they're rather coercive and authoritarian in the general area of cultural policy. And I think in this particular instance, PSED actually confirms my fear. And you mentioned earlier on, Vincent, some of the words. But if you look at the charter, and this is the key thing that the Department of Arts takes to the table by way of resources, it's a language of coercion. The minister will introduce PSED to place new obligations on the Arts Council, on artists and arts organisations. The Arts Council will ensure that all publicly funded arts organisations will be obliged to donate. That's an oxymoron. A donation is a gift. To oblige artists to donate is contradictory. Repeated, and there are other ones in here, repeatedly it's attached to another phrase, from the public purse. Now, I would simply say, if you were going back and were to think, how would you generalise this? Will this PSE dividend for everybody who gets money from the public purse apply across the board? I mean, I would ask the minister who's asking Estona, what's the PSED policy they have? What's the PSED policy for senior civil servants in the Department of Arts? All right, ask Minister for Education. Will every student who gets a grant to go to college from the public purse have a PSED attachment to it? So in principle, it seems to me that if you start generalising this principle, it's a very dangerous one at that abstract cultural policy level. Applying it to artists in particular seems to me to be actually offensive. Because like everybody else, and Minister, I entirely agree, like him, I've had the same experience over 40 years, artists voluntarily do an extraordinary amount. And then to introduce this coercive language, as though because they're in receipt of a bursary to do the work that makes them creative, that places this at the heart of public thinking and the country's pride, to require them to give two hours, that's specific, is, in my view, absolutely unacceptable.
At least 2 hours, I think it says. Minister Deanahan, this as coercive, and I think it is a point that will come up time and time again, the idea that arts organisations, but more particularly individual artists, shall donate this amount of time per year. I think it really is a problem.
Well, I don't see it as a problem. And the way I see it is one of the proposals here. And obviously, if there are issues with it, then we can discuss that and maybe change the emphasis.
And but I suppose the larger question that Kieran Benson is coming up with there as well, they're saying that in a way this almost, the tone of this seems to match something of a broader impetus from within the department. I mean, would you accept that at all?
No, I would not. Absolutely not. We have a very small department. We have a total funding of about 260 million. We're trying to protect the funding for the arts. For example, the Arts Council, the reduction in funding is not commensurate with other national institutions. For example, we did quite well in the last 2 years. The reduction wasn't as expected. And we've been really very proactive as regards supporting the arts in this country. And I think that's quite unfair, to be very frank with you now. And certainly because of my own background as a facilitator in the arts, as somebody that's supporting the art, not as an artist, but as a facilitator over the years and creating projects and so on, I would resent that statement and I wouldn't accept it. And I have control of my own department as well. And we were asked to do reform, carry out reform. That was a government decision. So we are doing that.
So are you saying that the department, like I suppose like all other departments, is under pressure to show that you are actually getting return for the money that is spent?
Well, that's very much part of it. And as I see it,
Rory Quinn is laughing.
If artists are connecting more with schools, and not all artists in this country get funding either.
Indeed, an important point.
A very small percentage of them, not a lot of artists, though, give their time. And if it's the principle that's involved here, I think that we can discuss that principle. But artists in general are very generous people. And that's the type of artists that I come across all the time, who are willing to give and give to their new audience, their potential purchasers of some of their produce in the future. And I think what we're trying to do here, in the past, there were a lot of reports, but there was no framework and there was no way forward. At least it can be criticised, but we do have a programme now. We do have a way forward and we can improve it.
Isn't that a fair enough point, Kieran? Yes.
With due respect, I don't think it is. The very first recommendation of the 79 report was to the Arts Council that they would set up their own education policy. And that's what they've done. So there was a framework right from the word go. And if we had time, I'd fill you in on the subsequent decades. I mean, I know, Jimmy, you were very interested in Deaf Ears, which is one of the reports I was involved in in the 80s. And they went on. But the point is, there was a framework, there is a framework, and there's a huge amount of experience currently there. But if you are under pressure in your department and you bring in this PSED requirement, you've actually dumped it on the Arts Council to implement. Now, I say that as a former chair of the Arts Council through the 90s. And if you start thinking through the practicalities of the requirements that you have placed back on an increasingly underfunded and overworked Arts Council, you'll see that this is really problematic. For example, what about the Garda vetting that will be required? Has any audit been done of Garda vetting of people going to schools?
Well, in fairness, the Charter doesn't actually say that people have to go into schools. It says local education initiatives. So is slightly different.
What's a local education
initiative?
Well,
I suspect that
it's not a school.
It might not be a school. I mean, there is education in the broader community.
Could I just say as well, Vincent, one thing about funding, we have a scheme this year to support, and you asked me this already and I didn't refer to it, to support arts in education. So any arts organisation that will put on a programme in a school, we will match them for funding. We have a small fund, but there's a good take-up in it. So in other words, if somebody can get funding in the private sector, an organisation, and go in and do a programme in schools, the department then will match that. This is outside the Arts Council funding. And just to say, the Arts Council funding in this country is really the totality, nearly, of what's available now for the arts. So we don't have any discretionary funding. In this instance, we have 210,000. We are offering the schools, if they come up with funding, if the organisation will come up with the funding, then we will match it,
to
incentivise that.
Orla McBride, Director of the Arts Council, an Arts Council described by Kieran Benson as underfunded, under pressure, and having all this dumped for implementation. Are you happy with the spirit, the tone, the content of this charter?
I suppose for 35 years, the arts and education has been an abiding concern of the Arts Council, and the Minister is right. Much of what has happened in the whole area of the arts and education with the CNCI, which is the Council of National Cultural Institutions, but also has been led by the Arts Council. And the Arts Council has had a policy. It might have been within its own internal workings, and I suppose there was no national framework from which it could attach that policy. So I suppose from our perspective, this signals what potentially could be a systemic change in the whole area of the arts and education. The spirit behind it is much more important for us than actually much of the narrative that is in the document. And when I step back from it, I think, well, what is the best outcome that we want from this charter? And it is that children and young people in our schools can get the best arts education by the teachers, but also arts in education experiences mediated by artists and arts organisations. So certainly, I am absolutely aware of the strength of feeling around the public service education dividend, and certainly we would be advising government, but that we would have reservations with regards to that. But as a member of the implementation group, I think, you know, if you take the charter as being, the resolve behind the spirit of the charter, then I think the skills and the experience and the expertise of the individuals around that table will negotiate through many of these different strategies, and I think we will come out with what will be the best outcome in the end. But certainly from the Arts Council's perspective, we have 35 years of experience. There is an arts sector and there is an education world that have been doing this, but it has been piecemeal, and from our perspective, at least now, there is some way in which we can look at coordination and integration, and actually the bringing together of the two worlds mandated by both departments, because unless both departments are around the table, as we know over 35 years, you will never have that systemic change.
Certainly it would seem a framework on which to build, but the Arts Council, as we know, would have no additional resources to put into these initiatives to help fund them. So doesn't that immediately create potential problems around it all?
Yeah, the Arts Council has absolutely no additional funds to put into it. The Arts Council puts almost 8 million into the area of young people, children and education per year. So that's a very significant signal of the Arts Council's commitment to this area and to this domain over the last 35 years. We don't have any additional resources, and I would be asking the Minister, it's coming up to the estimates process now with the budget in October of this year, and I would be asking the Minister to ensure that those particular strategies that we're looking at progressing as part of the implementation group, one would be around the website, the portal, and the other would be specifically around, and John will talk to these around the Arts Rich School initiative, that money will need to be found in order to progress those initiatives, because we cannot progress them from within the Arts Council's current budget.
Just on the Arts Rich Schools, at the moment, we're in discussions with a major sponsor, hopefully, that will come behind this. And also, this is happening in other countries as well, where schools that are providing certain services for the arts, that are connected to the community and that have other involvement with artists, then they get that designation.
So there may be some element of private funding
absolutely
around.
Absolutely. We are in discussions at the moment with a national organisation to do that. And just to say as well, in case we don't get the opportunity here, if you look at an organisation like the National Principals and Deputy Principals Association, for
we'll
example...
We'll hear from them later, yes.
Yeah, but look at the work they're doing. And that's in very much in a kind of after-school voluntary capacity. And they're putting that work in. You asked about asking others to put in work. They've been putting that type of work into their schools over the years in a very positive fashion. And as regards the portal, I think the portal is very, very important. To have a portal where teachers can go if they want to get information on the arts, where all of the national cultural institutions can feed any of their policy in arts and education. We need that because it's very fragmented at this moment of time.
We certainly would need it, but where's the money for it?
Well, we can find money. I just launched a newspaper online there, Century Ireland, and because that was a very worthwhile project, we can do that. So
indeed, yeah.
Then we look at the portal, and this is a priority, and it's something that I've given a commitment to, and we'll find money for it.
Rory Quinn, you want to come back in?
Okay, the country's in receivership. We don't have yet regained control of our sovereignty, but we are not arts poor, and we are not resource poor. The Charter will simply link in a more structured way things that have been happening informally, as Jimmy said, over decades. And yes, the Benson Report is a wonderful foundation upon which we can build something, but the additionality that is here today is manifest in this room and will be manifest by our two successors and their successors. Like a lot of organisations, government departments are very territorial and very defensive. And no matter what the department is, it can always do its task better than anybody else, and therefore it doesn't need advice. In other words, they're human beings. And we have affected, through myself and Jimmy, on a personal political level going back a long time, but also at senior departmental level, I have to say. And I think Johnny Coolan, who knows the department better than I do, would recognise that there has been a sea change there.
I would
respond to just one thing to what Kieran Benson said. It's a balance between rights and responsibilities. Because you're a citizen, you have the right to this and you have the right to that. And equally, because you're a citizen, you have the responsibility to participate in citizenship in whatever way you can contribute. Now, the idea of vetting people and how it's going to be done. Schools are inviting people. There's a million people in the primary and post-primary sector, if you include the teachers. A million. Monday to Friday. Every day. You never hear about crisis. You hear of nobody on trolleys. You hear of no problems of one kind or another. And it goes on for 40-plus weeks of the year. It is a miraculous undertaking that works 99% of the time. And when there is a problem, the problem gets sorted by the people on the ground. Part of that operation is that they are inviting in past pupils to talk about careers. They're inviting in interested people. They're inviting in local people. Schools are well equipped to deal with the kind of operational issues that you have raised in terms of vetting. But what I do think an English language teacher or a Gaelic Gaeilge teacher or an art teacher or a musician will feel empowered to ring up the local poet, the local musician, and say, listen, any chance over the next academic year, could you give us a couple of hours to come in and talk to our students? I don't think that's a big ask.
May I respond? I mean, I absolutely agree. But your language is all language of invitation. The charter is language of obligation. Shall be obliged is the charter's language. I entirely agree with the voluntarism generally in the society.
Yeah, but Kieran, we'd still be back 40 years where the stuff that you wrote was not fully implemented because there wasn't a compulsion in the Department of Education to participate.
But it's just in relation to the artists. That's my concern, because they're what the Department of Arts is delivering to the table. And my experience, as yours, Rory, is artists, and I could name them. If you took them in man hours of voluntary labour, some of them would go to years.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Now, and why should they be obliged to do 2 hours?
Here is the time to bring in some of the artists we have here, because in the studio, as well as artists, we have teachers, people in cultural institutions, students, people who've been involved in arts and education over the decades. Claire Halpin, you are an artist who's done a lot of work in the classroom. What do you make of this charter, first of all?
I suppose, in essence, I would welcome the core aims of the charter. But overall, I find it vague on detail, on structure, practicalities, the timescale, and contradictory, as Kieran Benson has mentioned, in parts. I feel it needs a lot more clarity if it is to be a cohesive, sustainable structure, and if it is to achieve the aims, which is to implement a strong arts and education model of practice in Ireland. And I don't believe that this can be based on volunteerism, which has been suggested through the public service education dividend.
Siobhan Parkinson, this was, again, you're somebody who has participated in many writers in school schemes.
Yes, I've just come from school this morning, actually, and I'm feeling very buoyed up by the encounter. And
the charter.
I do agree with what Kieran Benson says about the internal incoherence of the charter. I precisely wanted to make that very point about shall donate. You either donate it or you have to give it. It can't be both. And I don't think that's just nitpicking. I do think that shows a kind of very mixed thinking. And I think it is very coercive in its language. I think it's quite menacing in its language. And this constant reiteration of the word from the public purse is quite, I feel very got at as a writer who's not actually funded currently, except in terms of tax exemption, and which is actually a very small amount for most writers. And the document is appallingly badly written. And if anybody would like a writer's workshop in either of your departments, I'd be very happy to help out. But it really is dreadful. It's really hard to understand. That's also publicly funded, the writing of this document. So I'd just like to make that point.
But presumably you would have access to the implementation group, and we'll check on this later, to follow up on any points you want to make on clarification and to sort all this out so that while there is just the document at the moment to respond there is a committee that you can go and consult with as well.
Which is wonderful. And there's lots of very good things in it, of course. And I do think the website and the Arts Rich Schools and all those things are very good initiatives. And I would like to welcome that. And I do think that Minister Quinn is quite right when he says that it's a historic thing that two ministers should be sitting together and working together. And I like that, the fact that he's committing his successors also to the same level of commitment. I'm very glad to hear both ministers here today saying and recognising how much good work is already going on, because I really feel that the document doesn't recognise that. It sounds as if it was written on a different planet. It doesn't seem to have to take any cognizance of what's happening. But I can see that outside of the document, that the ministers themselves are aware of the wonderful work that's going on and the generosity of artists. And I think the generosity of artists is there, but it's quite a fragile thing. And if you start beating them around the head and saying they have to do this and they must give so many hours, that language of compulsion is quite threatening. And I do think that I'm very glad to hear the Minister for the Arts say here today that it's not actually going to be compulsory. But the document does say that it's compulsory. So there's obviously a contradiction there as well.
Yeah. Jane O'Hanlon, you represent the umbrella group Encountering the Arts and you're also Education Officer with Poetry Ireland, which administers the Writers in School schemes.
I work with a very committed bunch of teachers and writers right across the country. It's built on a commitment of conviction. We're investing in the now, we're investing in the future. And all the talk at the moment is about investing in building and rebuilding. And that's what arts and education and arts education is about. So I think it has made writers and artists very anxious. And I think to clarify that quickly, and I completely accept the Minister's bona fides on this, but I just think it's been unfortunate that individuals have picked it up and become very anxious. So I think maybe clarification and rewriting of the language would be very useful as quickly as we can.
OK, well, there are obviously many possible models for the arts-rich schools featured in the Charter. Let's hear now from Coláiste the Chulam in Ballincollig in County Cork, where for many years high participation in arts activities has been encouraged.
Hi, I'm Niamh Brennan, Kate Treenan, Joy Leary and Emile Polly, and we're from the sixth year class who made the bird out of glass.
Our theme was the seasons. And the bird was for our crest because the bird's on our crest and the bird's hanging on glass and it goes off the glass onto the wall. It's all colourful. It starts with winter on the left wing as you're looking at it, then it goes down to autumn, then summer and then spring as well.
They gave us this coloured sand and then we had to sprinkle it in whatever way we wanted to, and then you put a sheet of glass on top of it and then you put in the kiln and it would heat up and cook and then you'd have the colour. The artist we worked with was called Michael Ray, and he came to our class in September at the start of fifth year and he gave us this project to do and we had to come up with it ourselves, and he gave us advice and guidelines on how to work with glass and he showed us his work as well, so it was really interesting.
Yeah, it would be cool to go on to do it again, maybe in college or something like that.
I put in a portfolio. I applied to Crawford Art College in Cork to visual communication, so I was thinking of going on to do art in college afterwards. Exultate, you see in domino recto stations, cola datio. Confite mini domino, confite mini domino.
Hi, my name is Brian Murray and I'm a fifth year student here at Coláiste Chulam and I'm a member of the senior choir. I'm one of the tenors, so I sing like high for boys.
Hi, my name is Kim Broderick and I'm a fifth year student also. I'm an alto in the senior choir. Obviously, choir is something that we give up our own time to do. Everyone comes here at break. I myself have never done music in school. But I love it and I come here every break and I'd like to think that I'm a big part of the choir and certainly part of the altos. And it's fascinating because I myself through the choir have learned how to read sheet music and I'm able to follow along with everything. And as you may have heard, the harmonies were really difficult in that. So through choir not only do we get to make friends with people but we get to understand music.
We're in the drama room of Coláiste Chulam. We're down in the basement underneath the school. So one of the groups we have down here today are 18 students who took part in a drama exchange programme. We hooked up with a school in England, in Coventry, a city that's twinned with Cork, to explore the relationship between the two cities and the history of emigration of people from Cork to Coventry. Our students took a production of Tom Murphy's play Whistle in the Dark over to Coventry.
I'm David O'Connor. I play the character of Mush.
I'm Evan McCabe and I play the character of Harry.
And I'm Luke Gallagher. I play the character of Michael.
And Mush and Harry have just come in and they're discussing about immigration and about Michael trying to fill in as much as he possibly can with the English because they're all living in Coventry now.
Oh, the Holy Ones is the worst.
The ones that say favour, like that, favour, to the priest. And their sons is always thick. But they get good jobs all the same. county council and all that.
Ah, them are the ones that pretend not to know you when they meet you. Michael knows all about them fellas, huh?
Maybe it's because of the way you treat them. They don't mean
thinking to... so hard when they meet you, they don't see you. Because they're thinking so deep. Are you wise to them clients at all?
Well,
He knows them.
I know them, but they don't eat me.
Nah. Them shams want to be more English than the English themselves. All smiles, but looking sideways and spitting over their left shoulders, hoping no one sees.
Better than being the paddy, playing up to the old Irish image.
And you're not a paddy.
We're all paddies, and the British boys know it.
So we can't disappoint them if that's what they think. Personally, I wouldn't want to disappoint them.
You won't fit into a place that way.
Who wants to?
My name is Leah Cook, and this is Maureen Ranier. And she played the part of Betty Kearney in Whistle in the Dark. And she was the only female character in the original play.
She helps the audience to realise truly what a horrific situation the whole family find themselves in. And she is kind of the human voice within the play. I mean, we have a lot of sympathy for Michael, one of the other main characters at the start. But once he becomes very, very agitated, he... does a lot of things that he'll regret later on, and Betty is on the receiving end of a lot of that. I know certainly if any of the male characters treated me like that, I'd give them a belt, but I don't think Betty would. So it was kind of finding that place where she is so constrained by society and by her own inhibitions as a woman in that world that it was fascinating even to think about that historically, and made me realise how lucky I am.
It does contribute to our lives.
It's a release as well throughout the school day, that this is something that you can engage with different parts of your brain and your creativity, and it gives great scope for our learning of a different kind. And being part of productions and being part of plays, you become very familiar with dialogue, you become familiar with scene changes, and just even the vocabulary that goes with the theatre, which you can then apply to your study of whatever English text you may be doing.
Students from Coláiste the Cullum in Ballincollig, County Cork there, and the former principal of that school, Pat Kinsella, is here. Pat, I suppose a palpable sense of confidence and delight in arts participation coming from those students. How hard did you have to push to put arts at the centre of that school over the years?
It grew out of our own personal experience and a conviction that a school without art was absolutely inconceivable. You go into a dance class, an art class, a music class, there's no passivity there. As Ken Robinson, who's referenced in the report, says, art more than anything else has the capacity to wake our children up. You know, it's the place where you have lateral thinking, divergent thinking, creativity, you have, if you like, all the wonderful things that are being promised through the new Leaving Cert and through the Junior Cert framework. That's all happening in these subjects. They're vibrant places. And you get a sense of that from the student voice, which has just been heard. I see so many positive things then in the charter that will actually support the people who, incidentally, at all levels, they really are heroic people. I think this actually offers them considerable support and is a very positive initiative.
Dermot Carney, your arts officer for the National Association of Principals and Deputy Principals, mentioned earlier, NAPD, and a former art teacher and school principal. What do you make of this charter? Pat Kinsella just welcoming it.
NAPD, I welcome it thoroughly because we have been pushing this agenda since 2001. We also feel that we are a model for this. We have been running what is called creative engagement for the last 6 years. We have artists working in schools. We have absolute arts-rich schools all over the country. And we are in a position to be a resource for any discussion on this programme, because where a lot of people are talking in theory, we are actually doing it in practice. There is a funding issue, and we can see this where there is in the actual charter. There's a commitment to putting in resources and to training teachers. Possibly one of the things you need for any of these schools where you're looking for an arts-rich school is you need the leadership. If you haven't got the leaders of the schools on board, this is not going to happen. So I think there should be a commitment
to do some sort of in-service work with the actual leaders of the schools, because that will take it on to the next step.
Ger O'Shea, you're principal of St Catherine's School in Rush County, Dublin, a primary school, and you also represent the Association for Creativity and Arts and Education. I suppose the issues for primary school teachers are quite different to secondary schools when it comes to the charter. What's your response to it? I mean, it would seem that a good deal is expected from the teachers.
Well, yes, I think, I mean, obviously we welcome the charter as well, anything that supports the arts. I mean, the Association for Creativity and Arts in Education is very much about the children. And one of the things that we would feel about the charter is that it doesn't deal with outcomes. That the emphasis is heavy, as we can see from the discussion here, on the artist side. And I think, going back to some of the comments that were made at the beginning of this discussion, the idea of partnership we see as central to this. If the teacher and artist are in genuine partnership, then the outcomes for the children in terms of their creative voice is going to be exponentially greater. And I think primary school education in particular has changed with the revised curriculum and the ASTOR programme in recent times as well. The element of creativity is beginning to be seen as a central to what happens there.
Now, so I know you've worked as an actor and director, and I suppose you tried to bring aspects of theatre and drama into the classroom. Has there been enough support around that?
No. I think if I'm being absolutely honest, no. I mean, an awful lot of teachers are artists. But I don't think their artistry is supported, and I think their teaching through their artistry needs to be recognised more. And our association's Creative Schools Award aims to do that.
And do you think this charter could help to support that?
I think it has the potential, but I think it needs development.
Okay, Helen O'Donoghue, Head of Education and Community Programmes at IMA, the Irish Museum of Modern Art.
We welcome the charter. Most especially welcome it if it is a true consultation process. But one of the concerns I really have here is the onus on artists to carry this, and I know that's been really well articulated, but just to add to that, artists have developed, both locally in Ireland and internationally, a very particular pedagogy, which I think professionally stands alongside the pedagogies that are employed by teachers across all subjects in the formal education system. And one of the things that have really worked, if you look at all of our various research reports in all of our cultural institutions, it's about the twinning of two professionals. It's the twinning of the teacher in the formal education sector and the artist. And it sits alongside a really complex matrix of engagement from what Minister Deanahan cited as that extraordinary moment when you meet an artist walks into your classroom, to a much deeper and complex structure like the one that Claire Langan is involved in, creativity in the classroom. So I really urge us not to deprofessionalise artists' work and to recognise its complexity.
Arthur Lappin, you're acting director of the ARC, that fine cultural institution and theatre for children here in Dublin.
I'm a pragmatist. I've been working in the arts for 35 years. I believe that both ministers are very sincere about what they're doing. I believe that the implementation body is of a very high order and are very businesslike and going to be very businesslike about the implementation. So I would like to put aside any reservations. I treat this as being an extraordinarily positive initiative. And I think, ironically, the most important thing that's happened in the arts in Ireland since Kieran Benson's report was published 35 years ago. From my point of view, I spoke to a group of trainee teachers in a national teacher training institution recently, 40 of them. And at the end of it, I asked them, had they had any individual experience during their primary school which was sort of transformative or particularly memorable where the arts is concerned? Not one of those 40 teachers put up their hand. Now, I'm in a situation in the ARC where I'm trying to get teachers to bring children in to see performances, to exhibitions, to music performances. How can I realistically expect teachers to do that if they haven't experienced that for themselves? Now, I acknowledge that there are exceptional teachers like Pat from Ballincollig, and so many artists will cite one teacher who was influential in their childhood. And I would submit to you that the resources, limited though they may be in the short term, for the implementation of this charter should be focused in the teacher area, perhaps in the parental area, and in the national school cycle. I think do what you can for the secondary schools. But I think if you're to be effective, it's about the quality of the experience that the children have, not about the quantity. And I think there are dimensions to the charter agreement that suggest a slightly quantitative approach rather than a qualitative approach.
Orna McBride, do you want to come back in?
I just want to respond really to Arthur, what Arthur's saying around the quality of the experience for the child in the classroom. And one of the, I think, the major pieces that can be truly transformative in terms of this charter is the Colleges of Education residency programme. So the Arts Council has funded, will have funded five residency programmes by the end of this year, two in St Pat's, one in Mary Eye, one with Freble. So I think those are the types of initiatives that are really going to be transformative. A teacher will be in a classroom for 40 years. If that teacher feels comfortable and confident around the arts as part of their teacher training education, they're going to bring that into the classroom for those 40 years.
Lorraine Comer, Head of Education at the National Museum. You were Education Specialist with the Arts Council for 6 years, I think, and were involved in the Points of Alignment programme.
Notwithstanding all of the very positive elements that are within the Charter, I suppose there's one particular area that I would, as a member of the cultural institution sector, like to see clarified, and that is the statement, the National Cultural Institutions shall ensure that each student visits a cultural institution at least once in their second level school career. I think the principle of schools going out into cultural institutions, arts organisations, to engage with artists, with arts organisations and with art collections is really, really welcome. But that statement in itself could be deemed very reductive in terms of that kind of engagement. We're looking for meaningful engagement. We're looking for quality of experience. At the National Museum, we have a menu of ways in which schools can engage with us. It's not just a one-off visit.
And I'm sure many are already doing so, but I suppose, again, something like that is an aspiration. The reality is some schools would not visit national institutions, cultural institutions at all. So if students go once, surely it's better than not at all, and out of small things, big things come. We're almost out of time, but any questions, especially perhaps from
Ashton Grennan? I'm a transition year student in St. Louis High School. The question I'd ask is, are students going to be given the opportunity to go into this charter? I mean, we're the ones who it's going to happen to. I mean, we're the ones who are sitting in the classrooms. Will we be given the opportunity to have our word put into this charter?
Interesting question, John. Can students consult with yourselves?
We've already met four groups representative of a very wide variety of involved parties in the arts and education. But we will also be thinking of the students, yes. And we'd be very glad to hear them. And we'll be in touch with you in due course. With the student representative group, obviously, we can't be meeting all kinds of students all over the country, but the representative group.
Sam Killian, I'm a transition year student in Belvedere College. I think there are a lot of great ideas in the charter. I'm particularly enamoured with the reduced ticket prices for students for cultural events, even though I think I heard that it's only for events which haven't reached maximum capacity, which I think somewhat detracts from the generosity in which it was no doubt conceived, even though I'll take what I can get. I personally, and I'm sure many more like me, both in terms of teachers and students, would love to see more artists in our schools talking to students. And I understand that the aim is to inspire pupils. I'm not sure if you can force artists to inspire any more than you can force students to be inspired.
My name is Connor Murray. I'm a transition year student in Belvedere College. My question is for both ministers, and it's that if your departments continue to work together in the future, could you see subjects such as acting and dance and all other artistic subjects becoming examination subjects, because this could reach out to students and inspire them all over the country?
The answer is yes. And if you look at the details of the new revised curriculum for the junior cycle and for the way in which that will be assessed, I think it's going very much down the road that you're talking about.
I could see an area like dance and an involvement in physical education as well, where you could have a subject on both, for example, just to take that. But I think it's a very good point you're making there. Reward somebody and encourage them that would have an aptitude in one of those creative areas that are not being recognised at this moment of time. So I think that was really a very good question.
We're almost out of time, but could I ask the two ministers in particular to respond to what you've heard today? I mean, I think a fairly robust discussion. I'm sure some of it you've heard before. You'll be hearing a lot more, I'm sure, again. Rory Quinn, what do you make of what you've heard?
It's a start. It's building on an extraordinary amount of different and not necessarily connected sets of activities, which I would have to say are probably a bit haphazard. I think the people that need to be reached and liberated are not necessarily the ones who are coming to the cultural institutions. We have a very unequal society in Ireland. The sooner we get it more equalised through education, the better it will be. And that's really what we're doing. As for the use of the word shall is distinct from may. If a department wants to say something but doesn't really mean it and doesn't expect to have it implemented, it relies on the word may. If a department or a minister in a department is serious about doing something, the word shall is inserted. And Jimmy and myself could give you chapter and verse going back. That's not a signal to the artistic community. That's a signal to the civil servants and our successors, in my humble opinion.
Jimmy Dinahan, your response to what you've heard here today.
Well, I'm delighted with the response, and I think it's very important that we're having this discussion. And it was never meant to be a perfect document, and certainly we didn't hire a consultant and pay them a lot of money to write it either. And it was never meant to be an academic document either. I'm very, very encouraged with the discussion. And we live in a democracy, and if people have concerns about something, policy, government policy, they're entitled to question that, for sure. And this is something I'm looking forward to my engagement with Aistana now, because we're meeting very shortly. And if there are really genuine concerns out there that would actually damage what's happening at the moment, then, of course, the implementation group will have to take that on board. But I think there are enormous opportunities here for artists. I think there's a bigger issue here, and I would appeal to all the artists out there and the people that represent them here. I just would appeal to them, look, come into the discussion here, see the opportunities. There are major opportunities here for artists that everybody would benefit from. Just could I say in conclusion, just in case it may not be mentioned, Mary Burke is over there from the National Gallery. I'd advise any of you here people just to walk into the National Gallery any day. Just see what's going on there as regards arts and education, and you would be just blown away.
Absolutely.
I'd like to say that.
I think we'd all concur with that. Thanks to our panel, Ministers Jimmy Dinahan and Rory Quinn, Orla McBride, Director of the Arts Council, John Coulhan and Kieran Benson, to all our audience here from many strands of the arts and education, and our students from Belvedere College and St. Louis in Rathmines in Dublin. Damien Chanel was on sound, Colin Flynn was floor manager, and Sarah Binchy produced this programme. From all of us, goodbye.